Blog Talk Radio.
Opportunity for us to lean in together, talk, think, rethink. Enjoy a bit of some music. That great convergence, the things that the atmosphere that was always part of masonry from the beginning. Quiet, thought, not rambunctious, not screaming from the roof. But contemplative and capable of making observations, keeping control of their future. Think of that. Have an interesting commentary today that picks up on that theme. Being a Freemason, I wish I lived a long time ago. Here, where we are pretty open about our sense of history. History is hindsight, after all. And it's important the way it's written. So, let us enjoy. Work from Victor Hugo, famous French poet, for you. With a little whisper here. Can you imagine what it must be like to be mocked for having a talent, a gift that isn't widely accepted by your peers? Yeah, that's a We're going to talk about men who come out of obscurity. And I want to put a question to you, just because you're so much better at these things than me. We have competitions around the world. Some of them we call sports. Others we call business. Now, if we like to see a race being set. We like to see the speed and the preparation that goes into it. We like to see the winner. Win, place, show. Yeah. But can you honestly say that a person that wins that a race in general is inspiring? I think it stretches my sense of inspiration to do that. Immediately, we could unpack a particular race that was inspiring, but in general, no. In general, a race is what it is. I'm hard-pressed to find any inspiration in portraits of bank presidents or mayors or business executives, because generically there's nothing inspiring about them. They may be across the finish line first. But for somebody to declare that they're inspirational is, well, let's say we're at odds. Well, I have a different definition of inspiration. Right now, I'm reading about Cincinnatus again, just because he was an interesting fellow. Made the dictator of Rome, but such a military mind. And when he was done, he didn't return to the Senate. He returned to his farm and endeared himself to Romans and history. Now, today as William Wordsworth said, poetry is the first and last of all knowledge. It is as immortal as the heart of man. So, you see, Masonic effects is still an acquired taste, or as one past grandmaster glibly said, are you still doing that philosophy stuff? Says volumes, doesn't it? So from around the world, wherever you are tuning in, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure. And let me do what I do best and sit quietly and share with you some music to help us pull our thoughts together. This is Jimmy Forrest, Yesterday's. Thank you. Like that. Just sets an interesting mood, doesn't it? Take a breath. Fill up your glass. Ideas to begin to flow in. Yeah. Jimmy DeForest. Beautiful music. Here, let me share a commentary. See what you think. Being a Freemason, I wish I lived a long time ago. I guess you can tell what was on my mind when I was writing this. So very long ago, a story was written that celebrated a man lost in the romantic notions of chivalry in a time that had passed him by. The story by Miguel de Cervantes Saavedra made him the greatest Spanish writer for his work. The Ingenious Hidalgo Don Quixote of La Mancha, Part 1. That was first published in 1604, and Part 2 in 1610. For those of us who have a British connection, remember, this was stepping into the Civil War, to the Great Fire in London, the plague. During the 17th century, it was a period where beliefs were tested. The book has been translated into 60 plus languages about an old man on a quest, acting according to a code of chivalry to protect and preserve the honor of a present peasant woman, Delfina del Tobosa, the object of his obsession, who has no knowledge of his chivalric dedication to her. It is simply a magnificent read. Don Quixote lets us consider the madness that comes from living in the past. Imaginary world and one that tolerates the beautiful madness of a journey with a poor man, Sancho Panza, made his squire. Truth be known, Don Quixote, charming in his delusion, teaches us the living in the past is part fantasy, part escape, but not real. This became a movement for Masonry the moment it was partially identified as not wanting to change without distinguishing orbit. It would take a meager mind to disallow the balance between reality wearing rose-colored glasses. Reality is unaffected, but a life could be ruined if the fantasy were carried on. You never wish live a long time ago? That'll work. Zoot Sims, A New Moon. Yeah. Time we follow up on Wordsworth's comments, poetry is the first and last of all knowledge. It's certainly is different, isn't it? Today we can rush by, distracted by all kinds of little blips and pops that come up on a tiny screen. It's interesting. I did see the cliche the other day, four young men walking down a street together, each bent with their little screen in front of them. Interesting. I'm of an age where anything that I say will be prone to criticism and blame. Of course, as it should be. You can easily rationalize how my generation has been at fault for a great many things. And whether it does much more than act sanctimonious, bad things are going to happen. And my gosh, comparing them to previous generations, like probably the worst thing, possibly the insult to anybody. But it goes on. So I want all I want us to just be aware that there are a great many young men today growing up without healthy role models. Now, the healthy role model within Masonry is the true Mason, the student, the thoughtful man, patient man, a man who attempts those diabolical parts of our motto. Can you imagine being around somebody that thoughtful, that actually listened to you? It's wonderful. It's amazing the effect that it has on people when you truly listen. How often have I seen that in the lodge? Well, let's set that aside. I want to know about the minds of those of you who have written poetry as part of your experience within Freemasonry. I understand the Grand Lodge of Sweden expects this as they prepare your candidates as comprehensively as I can imagine over years before and between degrees. And I understand one of the tests or requirements or challenges is to write a poem and present it. How amazing. How utterly, remarkably amazing. Full marks, gentlemen. Where I am, we're quite some distance from that, and yet it's very, very close. Victor Hugo came to mind when I was thinking about peace for today. Victor Hugo is the son of one of Napoleon's generals. Interesting guy. So, don't mean to emphasize the privileges granted to the privileged class, but it is there. If you're born to wealth or born to fame, then there are privileges that are available to you that are not available to boys who come from more meager circumstance. But being born to fame and fortune does not establish character or intelligence or ethic or purpose. In fact, the risk is, as it is with all of us, there are risks, calamity. We may discount it, but that's unfair. Those folks understand the threat of failure. I'm going to read a poem to you. Written in 1830 by one of the most famous French poets, Victor Hugo. Now, this has been analyzed. It's a short little book piece called La Cochinelle, the Ladybird. And some linguists, this is a beautiful little statement, state that this expression dates back to medieval times. And according to a legend, oh, wonderful, an ancient man was wrongly condemned to death by beheading for murder. Just as the executioner's blade was about to come down, when Cochinelle landed on the man's neck and refused to move. Eventually, the king, Robert II, believed that the presence of the Cochinelle was an intervention divine and decided to pardon the man. Afterwards, the real murderer was found. And ever since, La Cochinelle has been seen as a lucky charm of sorts. And so the French writer Victor Hugo famously dedicated a poem to La Cochinelle. Here's goes something like this. The ladybug, she told me something is bothering me, and I noticed her white neck, and on it a little pink bug. I should have, but wise or mad, at 16 one is timid, seen the kiss on her mouth more than the insect on her neck. One would have thought it a shell, a pink, back with black marks, warblers leaned out from the branches to better see us. Her honest mouth was there. I bent toward the beauty. I took the ladybug, but the kiss flew away. Son, learn what they call me, said the insect from the blue sky. Insects belong to good God, but stupidity belongs to humans. There you are, you're 16, the kiss awaits, and what do? La Cochinelle. Victor Hugo. Yeah, there's an honesty in that. My goodness. And he writes to us through the generations. This is the man that wrote The Hunchback of Notre Dame and Les Mis, a fabulous play, if you haven't seen it, just staggering. And he wrote many biographies. One of these was published by his wife, Adele. He deeply influenced the Romantic music, or movement. I've told you about the Romantic period. But the expression, human expression, was valued. But his dad, Joseph Leopold, was an officer general in Napoleon's army and a governor of provinces in Italy and Spain. And his mother raised Victor after the initial collapse of their marriage, and she would rejoin her husband several times at his various posts of duty. But at an early age, this is an interesting guy, Victor began to write tragedies and poetry. And as young academics did in the day, he was set to translate Virgil. Yeah. You can do that today. But the need is less, perhaps, because we have some wonderful translations. He, at 17, him and his two brothers founded a literary review, the Conservateur Littéraire. And his first collection of poems, Odes to Poems Diverse, was published in 1822. The year of his marriage to Adele Fouché. And that marriage triggered the lifelong incarceration in a mental institution of his brother and competitor, Ingenie. It earned him a royal pension from Louis XVIII, the collection of poems. His first novel, Hans d'Isle, appeared anonymously in four pocket-sized volumes, and Cromwell, his most dramatic poem, was published in 1827. So think, brethren, the men that were the thinkers that created the idea, the notion of a collective of similar type, bound in a brotherhood, were influenced by this type of thinker. To find out what that influence is to read and absorb, digest the material for yourself. I was taught to mock poetry. I was taught by a very weak school system to mock most things that were abstract. That was the meagerness, not of the material, of course, but of instructors that had not been shown the illustration of intellectual capacity. Hugo's political stance, well, he went from royalist odes and then he cursed Napoleon's memory and back and forth and back and forth. And after the coup of Louis Napoleon, the third place in 1851, he believed his life was in danger and he fled to different places, finally to Guernsey in the British and the English Channel. And his voluntary exile lasted 20 years until he returned to France when Napoleon III fell from power and the Republic was reclaimed. In 1876, the old man was elected a senator of Paris. He died in 1885. It was a national event, the funeral, attended by 2 million people. I don't think we've lost anything. I think that out of the murk and the muddiness of the channel underneath us, it's just so much traffic that these pearls are still there for us to discover. Oh, it does set us aside. And for those of you who are listening, who have a particular talent, imagine being mocked for having a talent and a gift. And I want you to know that within you, you do have a talent. You do. Maybe it's time to be the man. Explore your nature, not your limitation, not what somebody else has tried to impose your thinking, not a bit. Explore the possibilities and how to do it well. The world's your oyster there, isn't it? We begin on our search to put some framework or structure around our curiosity by exploring the curiosities and advances of other people in other times. It's not so much studying history. If you're going to study architecture or study art, and the study of art is really kind of an interesting term. Is there any difference sitting there and experiencing it from studying it? When does the experience become study? I think it's when we begin to ask questions. What is that? What is that play on color? What is it about the composition that has endured for hundreds of years? What does it feel like for me? Oh, it's just sort of a dull little thing and kind of anticlimactic, isn't it? No sense of the thrill, is it? Some people can take the most beautiful act, the most beautiful objects, and make them trivial and mediocre. That has nothing to do with the work That has everything to do with mediocrity and stupidity, as Hugo points out, of a human being. So we can't always be governed by stupid. And stupid will always criticize things they know nothing about. The interesting thing about stupid is they're never aware. They never stop. So those of us of a more delicate fabric have learned how to put some controls around them so that, you know, we don't have that despotism that can come from the openness and democracy, somebody just shrill and screaming and then claiming it's a right. No, thoughtful people have come up with conventions. But within you, there is a capacity. Perhaps it is a form of music. We do know, I think we can agree, that there are young men searching and coming to the door of Freemasonry, and for reasons that we know are leaving. My tendency is to explain it like this. Unspoken expectations. Unspoken statements. When somebody comes to us with a question of character, being met with a formula approach, or by zealots slapping each other in the back with that scary smile of piety that you see, you know the one I'm talking about. Doesn't really resonate, does it? Because it's not authentic. It's not you. It's a collective. These young men are coming forward needing something. And it's a compressed need. We don't take the time to think about helping them unpack that need, to understand it, because each person articulates it and connects with those needs in a unique way. Each young man, the hesitance that I have is anything that treats these young men as a commodity. For instance, I can't see individuals as the candidates. I don't know how to do that. You were you, he is he, him. But when they come to the door with a need, if it was hunger, we would at least feed them. And would it be so wrong for them to assume or think or guess that based on what they've read about us and what they know about our history, that they would be expecting a level of quality that would be a bit surreal? The Gentleman's Club. The refinements of culture. I'm sorry, that's not country music. The refinements of culture that are inspirational. Would that be so out of the pale? I think not. And I think a lot of these young men are asking the questions, and we are a bit too dismissive. They are, first, reasonable questions and worthy of an answer. What is the point? Insight. Learning the pathways or disciplines that are required to support people in unenforceable ways to connect intellectually with that sense of purpose, to bring about awareness. Well, if we're going to purport to do that, my goodness, it would require that our surroundings show that value, that the atmosphere we create where we meet these young men speaks for us. So instead of Victor Hugo or Plato or Beethoven or Einstein, we don't have busts like that. Or we have a mayor. You see the difference? The great, it's the context. I'm sure they're somebody's son and they're loved, but to put them forward as a source of inspiration is asking a little too much. But I digress. Here. This music will help me explain what I'm trying to say. Thank you. that. So expressive. So much emotion in the notes and the material. Bill Evans. Can we talk a bit more? Just a bit. We look to better understanding. And I think most of us have realized it's not going to come from our lodges. That we can busy ourselves trying to, I don't know, reinvent the lodge, the ethos of the lodge, but I think that day has come and gone. It's not a reinvention. I think we need to simply appeal to another chapter in Masonry, within the lodge, where some will be able to be interested in creating it, and others will not. But what form? What form? Even then, it's risky to suggest. Where do you and your mates feel most comfortable? And how do you initiate those spontaneous conversations about things that matter in the craft to you? For me, most recently, it's over coffee. Yeah, we relive the coffee houses of Britain and France. And it still hasn't stopped. No, just don't think it was always a whiskey and a pint. That was there too. But so were those moments over a cup of tea or strong coffee where we would lean into the conversation a bit. And more than opinion. We were stretching beyond opinion. Because that led to us people being dogmatic, mistaking opinions for fact. I listened to some insecure, surprisingly insecure types, becoming loud and playfully aggressive when they're expounding on something that's important to them. And I realize that they have never in their life had the opportunity to be listened, to be heard, without feeling that they need to scream it out, to overwhelm the audience with some declaration that's usually pointless. I hate history was the most recent that was put to me. Nobody hates history. Here. The puzzles, the understanding, when you see the ritual done well, not done good enough, but done well, where it's where the focus is not on the individual performers, where we're waiting for somebody to walk up and do their piece and walk away. This, I think, is one of the tragedies of Masonry, where I am. But the focus is on the experience for the candidate. Total, start to finish. And the timing is done so that his focus is unbroken. His concentration, his suspension of everything else going on around him to listen to the words and to experience meaning. Happens because of the direction of the lodge. That's what I'm talking about here. The rest, little subsequence. The second degree, eh? When the stabilization of the positions of the wardens in the lodge, settling them finally in the west and the south, meant some change to the symbolism of the first degree. Remember, earlier we were talking about where The wardens should be physicians. William Preston became concerned about the symbolic structure of the second degree. His lecture system shows a second degree layout, with the junior warden moved back to his place in the west beside the senior warden so that the candidate could now symbolically enter the temple between the wardens and representing the two great pillars, and then proceed up a staircase to arrive at the middle chamber of the temple. This practice ceased in England on the reconstruction of the degree ceremonies after the union of the two former Grand Lodges in 1813. The whole of the second degree is part of the general progress of the candidate. In this instance, from outside the temple proper, still by the route Preston's method suggested, to a central place. Here is discovered something which the candidate has unknowingly been seeking, the manifestation of God as the grand geometrician. Unknowingly been seeking. Thus, with the initial discovery of him and a greater acquaintance with his works in the outer environs of the temple, and now this added knowledge on the gaining entry into it, there must be a greater appreciation of his omnipotence as the creator and controller of the universe. The stress in the first degree is on things of the left, and in the second, the accent is on the right, emphasizing the old connection between these two degrees as complementary to each other. In older times, the right side was considered superior to the left in matters of strength, and so the right symbolized the higher degree. The square, the second of the great lights of masonry, is the special symbol of this degree. For the whole of it is based on the use of the square. Even the threefold sign of this degree is a combination of many squares. And it is possible to conceive that this sign is an attempt to form the letter G, standing for geometry. The special study of the degree, and in which the square is of paramount importance. The significance of this letter and of geometry in relation to masonry, as well as that of the square, are discussed in other chapters, but it is in this degree that the candidate is introduced to the use of these principles and instruments in the construction of the temple. The development of the degree through the years has meant that in some ways its symbolism has become somewhat mixed. This is bound to happen in circumstances of independent development in several places, followed by reconstitution, probably based on a measure of compromise, affected by later changes, dictated for other reasons. But for all this, the second degree has a special significance of its own and shows the candidate as a craftsman at the midway point. It is a restful degree, one of peace and tranquility and with some sense of achievement. In his progress through the lodge from the west to the east, he has reached the center of the lodge, halfway between the senior warden and the master, where in former times the letter G was displayed in this degree. In the center of the checkered carpet was in many lodges a five-pointed star in which this letter was placed when the lodge was opened in this degree. And this was intended to emphasize that the number five appeared to have a special association with this degree. Although several numbers of Masonic significance appear in it, the five appears most of all. It is the hypotenuse. Is it the hypotenuse of the right angled triangle? So as to stress that the number is particularly related to craftsmen. If the center point of a standard lodge layout is taken and using it as a center, an arc of a circle is described with a radius equal to half the length of the lodge. The distance from its center point to either the master's or senior warden's pedestal. That arc on the south side of the lodge should properly pass through the junior warden's pedestal. Euclid tells us that if two lines are drawn from the ends of a diameter of a circle, say from the master and senior warden's pedestals, to meet at any point on the circumference of that circle, say the junior warden's pedestal, the angle contained by those two lines is one of 90 degrees, a right angle or square angle. This makes the true layout of the lodge as set by the positions of principal officers into a right-angled triangle with the junior warden sitting at the right angle. This appears at some time to have been a deliberate change, probably for this reason, and so far as the second degree is concerned, who better than the junior warden sitting at the point where this very angle is made to tell us in the opening that he will be proved by the square, which is an angle of 90 degrees. The arc of a circle which we have described is that between east and west. Via the south. The course of the sun's daily travel and all the members sitting around this arc are at the point of the square angle at the center line of the lodge. Don't you love it? Don't you absolutely love it? Well, I see that we're wrapping up for today. Never enough time to listen to responses and ideas in the direction that you're going in. All in earnest, all in good faith, my goodness. But to listeners from the Netherlands and France, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to have you here. North America, yes, absolutely. In the various jurisdictions here, thank you. Ontario, Upper Canada. And Japan, yes. And Britain, very much pleased to have you tune in. And Australia, thank you. I'll leave it at that. Get on with my business for the next week, and hope that you will too. Hope that you will find a smile in everything that goes on around you and be infectious with your enthusiasm for life. Not silly and over the top, not offensive and aggressive, but oh, leave the upsell. Oh, if I hear that one more time around somebody questioning Freemasonry, I will just shoot myself in the foot. Here. I'll leave you with a pleasant little smile and hope to see you again. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. It's been a pleasure. This is Zaz.
Action!
Of course it's Zaz. Before she was rich and famous.
One of the exciting things about writing and teaching a sushi class is that
skip the ad.
Da 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 da
See you.